I have been gone for 6 months, but now I have returned. A Place for Humans podcast is still alive. That's the name of this podcast. Dakota, that's my name. I have been traveling for the past 6 months, mostly spending my time in India. Mother India, what a beautiful country. A little bit of time in Turkey, Göbekli Tepe, Karahan Tepe, Düğün Simone, my own philosophical, archaeological work, digging in my mind while exploring the ancient ruins of a lost civilization, and then ending my trip in Thailand. I just returned back to the United States from Thailand. I don't even know where to start. India, I guess we'll start in India. What did I do? I don't know why I go to India. Maybe because of a past life. Maybe because I'm attracted to the sort of radiance of spirituality. It's like a, you know, it's like a magnet. When you think of the when you think of something spiritual, what do you think of? You think of Buddhas. You think of the Om symbol. You think of Shiva. I feel like Hindu Vedic culture, Vedic philosophy is kind of the standard of spirituality. And I'm very hypnotized and blinded by this. And, well, I think it's real, actually, in a lot of ways. I think that these yogis that existed for thousands of years ago, the Adi Yogi, the first yogi to wake up, the first human to become realized, to have that aha moment, the first person to just sit down and say, I am not my thoughts. My thoughts are like parasites just coming in to try to possess my mind, try to capture my attention into perceiving reality a certain way. But the Adi Yogi, the first shaman, the first awakened man, the first awakened woman, sat there and said, nothing. You can't pollute a mind that is already empty. So, there's a part of us that is this Adi Yogi. The fact that this one person way long ago woke up means, in some ways, that we woke up. You know, they you've heard of this idea, like when these group of monkeys learn how to wash their peanuts in the water, and then somehow by like this strange collective shockwave of consciousness, monkeys on different islands simultaneously learn how to do it. There seems to be some kind of energetic field that connects species together and evolves. You see it in sports. I mean, sports just get crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier with each new generation that comes in. There seems to be just this shockwave that pulsates each generation. So I think, like, these people, these saints that have taken a step back to say, you are blessed by the illumination of your own eyes. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the story. You're not your story. I know you think it. I know you think you're your story, because who are you if you don't have your story? If you don't have your suffering? Suffering is like a blanket next to a fire. There's a comfortability, a home, a nest in suffering, because it solidifies, it gives authority to the fact that we are alive, that we are human, and we lose ourselves in that, because it's what gives our life drama, it's what gives our life meaning. But somewhere long ago, the first awakened being did not become polluted by these thoughts. They just renounced it fully. And they're not overtaken. They're not hypnotized. They're not polluted by identity. They're not polluted by ideas. By these thoughts that just come and go and come and go like seasons. Which one today? Who are you? Who are you if you don't have your suffering, if you don't have your story? You're no one. And who are you if you're no one? You are everything. If you are nobody, then you have the opportunity to be anything. And actually, you are. You know, people talk about becoming one with everything. But this is not the right way to talk about it. You don't become one with everything. You already are one with everything no matter what you do. You are inherently one with everything. Anyways, I've always been attracted to these ideas, sort of magnetized and pulled to these sort of spiritual ideas because there seems to be a truth to it. There seems to be a concrete, solid thing there for me to take shelter in, to take faith in, spiritual faith. I have faith that I'm a part of something, and this thing that I'm a part of is a mystery. It's not Jesus, it's not Buddha, it's not Krishna or anything that has a form. But what I'm a part of is something so beyond that there's no words to describe it. And actually, you're a part of it. And when I walk on the streets sometimes, when I'm aware enough to have this thought in my head and I see another person, I love them instantly. No matter what they're up to, no matter what kind of person they are, I look at them and I see their eyes, the illumination, the divine illumination looking back at me. And it's just like, we are in this fishbowl together, this fishbowl of mystery. And like for a brief moment, here we are. We get to share this moment. Who knows how the universe, it exploded itself into existence billions of years ago, they say. And for some weirdness, all this little stuff happening. Oh, well, atoms coming together and it's moving so fast. It's actually 99.9 empty space, but it looks solid. Blah, 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 blah. And fast forward all the way, things shape-shifting, water boiling, and slugs, and fungi, and plant life, and breathing, and then all of a sudden, here we are, locking eyes as we cross the street for a brief moment. Who are we without that? They say that we are the children of stars, that this life is the afterlife of the stars, that our bodies are made from the materials that are found in the death of stars and exploding stars, that reincarnation is actually a fact, or that energy is transmitted, not destroyed, but it becomes something new. And somehow these explosions in the universe become people, become identity, become beauty, become art. Holy shit, man. Think about all the stuff, all the human, the unique. Dude, we are such a strange creature. Picasso, Tupac Shakur, RIP. Also RIP to Picasso. I think he's probably passed on. I'm not 100% sure. Joni Mitchell, the shamans, the saints, Jesus. Everything, just here in our little species. That's just us. And now look at how big the universe is. That's the mystery. We are a part of something. I don't know what it is. Who can say what it is? That's what a religion is attempting to say desperately. Just grasping at anything to make sense of itself because we can't rationalize why we exist if we don't have a story, if we don't have a suffering. We go to such extreme lengths to distract ourselves with so many problems, and instead of just letting it all go, baby, relax, man, relax. It's all good. But, you know, easy for me to say. So I'm attracted to this. So I go to India because I feel like India, man, these guys know something. And you walk through the streets of India, there's trash everywhere. There's cows and cow poop and people pissing and spitting and honking. And it's just, God, it's overwhelming. But then in the midst of all this chaos, you just like see people bowing to statues of Shiva or Krishna. You see that those yogis, the Adi Yogi, the first people that woke up, are not dead. That even though all of us are walking through life and we're totally blinded by our bullshit here, we're just unconsciously taking one step after another, attachment to attachment, just, you know, oh, I got to do this tomorrow. And we have everything planned out. An asteroid could be coming to smash into us now, but I don't know, you know. I love that statement. I don't know, you know. But I really don't know. Those yogis are still alive. And every time we get those little brief moments of us, even if it's just a bow, you know, if it's just a quick recognition of the divine, of God, whatever way you want to see God in your, whatever is helpful for you. God is everything. So it doesn't matter what your symbol you use for God, it's right, because God is everything. So there's no way for whatever you conjure for it to not be some representation of God. You use the symbol to become the symbol. This is a deep meditation that very basic that you'll learn if you start learning a meditation, is that you meditate on an object. Your breath, an object in the room, the center of your forehead, a mantra. You meditate on an object. And this object, this point that you are meditating on, will sort of take all those thoughts and just singulate them to one point of awareness. And that one point of awareness, it just eventually pops. It just pops, and then all of a sudden you are in the state that is known as meditation. And actually, it's kind of funny because there is not like a meditation. Meditation is just concentration. But there is a state, there is a concentrated state that you reach when you are absolutely focused, mastery of the mind. We go through life and this body just controls us. We eat like shit. We get ourselves into toxic situations. We know when something's not good for us and we don't change. This mind controls us. Our desires, our appetites absolutely control us, and we are weak. 10 minutes out of a day, 10 minutes out of your day. Think about all the shit you do in 24 hours of a day. You're in bed, eating snacks, brainlessly scrolling through Instagram, checking new Snapchat filters, talking shit with your friends. 10 minutes out of your day. If you just sit down, close your eyes, and try to focus for 10 minutes. 10 minutes, and it'll change your life. do this every day, 10 minutes, you'll be instantly, 1 week, 2 weeks, you'll notice immediate results. Whenever you can, morning, middle of the day, after dinner, before bed, 10 minutes. Dedication, focus. You'll instantly notice that you're going to be less reactionary to situations in life. You're going to start to realize your potential. You're going to start to realize how cluttered your mind is, how filled with BS that your mind is. You just have stupid thoughts. It's not just me. I know it's not just me. But it's also me. So when you have stupid thoughts, remember it's also me. And it's also everybody. We all have such stupid thoughts. The monkey mind. So, like the symbol of Kali Ma. You know, she's wearing this like a necklace of human heads. These human heads represent these personalities. Anger, hunger, happiness, lust, greed. All the daily emotions that we flow through. And she's wearing them as a necklace. When she has those attachments come up, she takes out her sword, bah, chops its head off, and looks at it like jewelry, as like an accomplishment, a victory, a symbol of transcendence that like, I'm not this temporary blip of emotion that I feel in this current moment. Nor am I the one I'm going to feel in the next moment or an hour from now or tomorrow or whenever something tragic happens in my life or something crazy beautiful happens in my life. I am not the overwhelming emotion I feel in that moment. This is what is called Maya. This is what's called getting high. This is what's called hallucinating and falling in love with the moment and losing yourself in the personality. We're chasing those highs, you know, like the like Uncle Rico and Napoleon Dynamite. I could throw a man, if this was back in 76, I could throw a football over those mountains. It's Uncle Rico reminiscing about his high school days. Put it on, put the necklace on. That's not you. Feel it. If you feel sad, feel it. If you feel happy, feel it. Some people say things like you have to be completely unattached. BS. You're here to be a human being. You're here to feel the things that a human being feels. It's beautiful to become attached. It's beautiful to feel love. It's beautiful to feel sadness. Oh my God, heartbreak. I'll never love again. And then you do. And then it's just a firework explosion. And look, detachment. Detachment is a truth. Nothing lasts. Your whole story is the spark of the Big Bang happening. The Big Bang happened. You can imagine this explosion. There's sparks. I guess it wouldn't actually be that because there's no space is a vacuum. But just for vision, visualization, there's just sparks flying, right? And these sparks, think about how fast a spark just like burns out. You know, it's like a little spark of your lighter or something. A millisecond. Our lives are the flash of a cosmic millisecond spark. Right now, you, me, are all little dramas in our life. It's all just like a millisecond in the scheme of what we are a part of. In Hinduism, in India, the people that really get it say, Drop that idea, man. It's not you. There's something deeper going on here. But it's like at the same time, play the game, you know, who cares? So anyways, I like to go to India and I like to play around with this idea and I like to challenge myself and I like to fight with my ego and what is spirituality, what is not. Everything is obviously spirituality. Then why am I climbing the mountaintop for? But it's like, yeah, but I know the slums are also spirituality, but the mountaintop at the sunset just is so much better. But just be here now, man. You know, I just such a battle. Such a battle with spirituality and the spiritual path. But I guess it is all perfect and wherever you're at is cool. But there is just something nice, man. There's just something nice about being in love and just on a mountaintop with a joint. So I went to India. I met this group of tattooed people. I call them the tattooed Hindu rebels of India. And this is a group of sort of tribal people living out in the jungles or countryside, the rural side of Chhattisgarh. It's not a very big tourist state in India, but it's a very interesting, beautiful state. And these Ram Namis, which is the name of their tribe, the name of this group of people, community, Samaj, they are... In India, there is what's called the caste system. I don't know much about it, but the caste system, from my understanding, is that there are social roles in which your family is naturally born into. You're born into this social role based on your family's caste. The Ram Namis were not allowed to enter temples because of their low castes. You know, they none of them really knew how to read. They're mostly kind of farmers, and this is their job, is to maintain this lower end of society, which is, you know, an important role to keep things going. But this group out of all of India began to revolt. They began to learn how to read. They said, you know what, the temple, you're not going to let me in the temple. Well, guess what? The temple is not in walls. God is not in walls. Ram, which is the name of God in India. Ram Nam, which means Ram's name, the name of God, is not inside of a temple. My body is Ram. I am the name of Ram. This is where they got their name, the Ram Namis. And the older generation tattooed Ram over and over and over again all over their entire bodies, over their head, their eyelids, their hands, their waist, every place you can imagine. Ram, 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 Ram. And they started their own sort of community. And it's very unique in India. These guys are not very, there's not very many of them, maybe 1,000. And out of that, the tattooed ones are 100. So it's very beautiful and rare opportunity I got to spend with them. The Ram Namis. And I went to like a sort of ceremony for a funeral. And they were doing this kind of service where they were reading from the Ramayana, which is a Hindu book. And they all wear these, they actually gave me one, like a shawl, and the shawl just says Ram, 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 Ram all over it. And everyone is dressed in this, in these shawls, and they wear these big giant crowns made of peacock feathers, and they're like dressed like characters in Skyrim or something. They look like little wizards, and it's very interesting and very unusual compared to other Hindu sects. And these guys, they say that they don't worship any symbols, any deities, even though they take the name of Ram. They say Ram is like energy. Ram means everything. Everything is, Ram means God. God don't have a form. How can God have a form? Everything is God. God is consciousness itself. So that's their understanding of Ram. So they don't have statues. I don't even think they have temples. They just live in these little villages. I loved spending time with them. They were very nice to me. And I have a tattoo that says Ram on my arm. And they love that. Ram. From the Ram Namis, I went to meet... Wow, I got to meet a really cool Agori. For those of you that don't know what Agori is, basically it's the crazy side of Hinduism where they do rituals with dead bodies. They meditate on top of dead bodies. They eat the flesh. God damn, I just got possessed by an Agori. They're like, shut the fuck up. No, so the Agori are a group of ascetic Hindus that sort of live in the outskirts. They hang out in the cremation grounds, usually alone, and they cover themselves in the ash of the freshly burned bodies. Because in India, they burn bodies, and most people don't get it. It's not like in America where you go to a building or something. You know, a lot of these bodies are just burned in a village or in a Varanasi right by the water in a pile of... wood. And these Agoris will take a piece of the body and eat it as a part of a ritual, take the ash as a part of a daily ritual and cover themselves in it. But they will eat a piece of the body maybe once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime. And I hung out with this Agori, Bhavani Baba. I've become really good friends with him. We talk all the time. I actually bought him an iPhone. And he uses it on WhatsApp and just calls me. And we just talk about God. We talk about what all of this is. And he always has something very interesting to say. Let me show you something he said here. Bhavani Baba. He is a good friend of mine. Now, we met just by like strange circumstances, you know, just me traveling around. Where was I? I was in Hyderabad, which is the most bizarre place, but there's a new Agori temple in the outskirts of Hyderabad. And this guy was just there and he had such a profound delivery and confidence in the things, like, you know, you hear a lot of these sadhus. I've been traveling India for many years, and you hear a lot of these sadhus say the same stuff over and over and over again. We're all one. Here's some basic breathing technique. This is the meaning of yoga. This is karma. You hear these yogis and sadhus sort of regurgitate this knowledge. But when I met Bhavani Baba, he had such conviction in the things he was talking about. I can tell he means it. He's not a Baba, just a sadhu, just to get attention, just for money, just to, you know, a beggar dressing up as a holy man. He is like an actual guy on the path to realize himself, to realize God. And some of the things he says, it just blows my mind. And I love just talking to him. He's got basic English, so, you know, we can't get too deep, but even with his basic English, he manages to deliver such powerful messages, and it's mostly his presence. What's this? Let's see.
Agori means power.
Agori means power.
Anything, nothing.
Agori means satya.
Anything is nothing.
Agori every time, not stupid words, stupid thinkings.
Agori, he's explaining the meaning of Agori. Agoris aren't training, stupid thinking.
Seva Guru.
That is what it talks about.
This type of. Agori, not one word, not last word. Agori means not one, not last. Agori is a big journey. Every time. This body sacrifice after new body, last Agori.
I think right there he's saying, you get a new body
and then, you know, it recycles, you get another body, and then the last body is an aguri. It's the last body you take before you go to God. You know, the aguri is interesting. The name aguri in Hindi or Sanskrit means beyond terrible. And what it means is that, like, there's nothing terrible. If everything is God, how can anything be terrible? Oh, you think this is gross? You think dead bodies are gross? You think we naturally feel these things, but that's my ego. That's my ego that says, yo, this is gross. Get that away from me. But if I'm a saint, or, you know, if I'm trying to understand God, I need to break these boundaries that anchor me to a false perception, that anchor me to a pathetic little identity that isn't infinite. It doesn't encompass my full spirit. So I need to wear that head as a necklace, wear it like a piece of jewelry, and say, not today. And you break free of that. You cut that head off and overcome it.
24 hours. I mean, 24 hours your time. You're doing job, mobile, videos, watching, all time given. I'm telling only 10 minutes. You pray to God. Leaving you all thinking. Only sit God and close your eyes. Only see God. No mantras. You see only God. Close your eyes, but you seeing God. Leave it. Any work, wife, kids, all leave it. Job. Only 10 minutes. Not 1 hour. You do 10 minutes, you realize that what God. God means what miracle. You direct see, I'm telling you, only 10 minutes. But you're thinking only God. Only God you focus. You do only 1 week, I'm guaranteeing, you see the God.
I love that part. It's real. Man, just like knowing these people are alive, like this guy just has nothing. His whole life, I call him and he's just like doing, he's just like, oh, I'm just meditating. I'm here doing this puja. They do these like big extravagant rituals all the time. He says he gets power from them. But it's like, man, I don't dedicate any of my life to God, really. I have a lot of like philosophical stuff. I think a lot. But like, think about like how much of our life is working for someone else's dream. You know, we're like working for some business or something. All our skills are being developed to benefit something else. It's not even, it doesn't really benefit us. It just benefits somebody else. Or like how much time we spend focused on just things that don't really matter. And then these people are just like trying to get rid of all of that. And it's just interesting, you know, that's in us. That possibility is always there. You can have nothing and survive. We think we need so much to live, but like you can have nothing and survive. And actually, God is waiting there for you. But we can't do that, you know. We want things. We want a beautiful life. We want to eat amazing food. We want a nice home with cool things, with PlayStations and VRs and iPhones and Netflix.
And God is cool with it, you know? He's like, here, you want that? Here it all is. It's a buffet. Enjoy. But like, it's spiritual to break that cycle and just need nothing but what you already have. To say like, I'm good. I have everything I need. Everything I need exists within me because the universe is perfect. I'm not this body anyway. I am. How could I be? To bring it back to that point, I'm a little stoned, so I keep kind of losing my thought when I'm going on tangent. But to bring it back, those little sparks of the Big Bang, our whole lives are happening in those sparks. And I forgot my thought again. God damn it. It's just, I had some point with the sparks. But here I am in this awkward moment. Why, God? We are equally the conditions that made the spark possible as we are the spark. Even though all of our lives is just the awakening of that spark real quick, just a blip of time, actually we are the environment that allows the spark to exist. So we are eternal somewhere. Eternal. We are eternal somewhere, baby. And I think that's what people mean when they say, like, we are God or you are God. It's not that, like, you can control the weather with your hand or you can read minds or make someone fall in love with you, but it's that it's just like you are eternal somehow. It's hard to put into words, but like you are eternal somehow. And like, I know you got all these problems and stuff, but like, fuck them, because you're eternal, actually. So the Ram Nami funeral was interesting. They were singing songs and dancing around. I think I have some video, actually. Let me see. And it's just me, and they dress me all up. They put me in the hat. Here it is right here. You see what I mean? Like, look at their big hats and the clothes, man. It's so interesting. Ram, ram, ram. Truly incredible. I love these little just blips of life that happen like that. After that, hung out with the Igori. Covered myself in human ash. Then I went to Turkey. Spent some time at Karahan Tepe, which is one of the most significant archaeological sites ever discovered, you know. And I knew this in my heart and soul and in my intuition. It told me back in 2018 when I first heard about it. I said, I need to visit this place. I don't know what it is that's drawing me towards this place, but I need to go visit here. In this random part of Turkey, Karahan Tepe. So I go to Karahan Tepe, and there's this 11,000-year-old snake carving into a little tiny wall. There's like this carved wall that looks like a little bench or like a little wall that you would like sit with your back against. And there's like a 7-foot long snake, 8-foot long snake. And there's maybe like a dog or like a horse or something next to it. And then there's this hill with all these circle stone structures that are kind of peeking out of the hill. And no one really knew the significance of it in 2019 when I first visited there. We were just like, oh man, this is some crazy lost civilization. This dates back to about 12,000 years almost. We don't know how it's possible, but there's this like under this hill, there's a bunch of structures. And I was just walking around all this incredible stuff. And then fast forward 2022, which is now, they have found so much stuff there that it's like mind blowing. This is a lost civilization at the end of the last ice age. Building incredibly unique structures. They're almost ominous and spooky. It's these human heads and these giant pillars with animal carvings and leopard bones and just unique, very, very unique, intricate, just stone arrangements. It's like we didn't even think it was possible. Some of these stones weigh 15 tons. That's like thousands and thousands of pounds. And they're like lifting them and erecting them into these standing circles, which some people say have astronomical alignments. It's insane. Karahan Tepe is a site that should not exist, but yet it exists. And it's forcing us, all of historians and textbooks that are now in high schools and stuff like that, it's going to have to be rewritten. It's time for us to acknowledge that everything we knew about history was wrong, because here it is, Tash Tepeler, Tash Tepeler, Göbekli Tepe, Karahan Tepe, Sefer Tepe, all of these sites are saying, hey man, you guys got it wrong, because you thought civilization started with Sumer and Babylon 6,000 years ago, but actually, this is a 12,000-year-old civilization. And it goes on for miles in every direction. This is a super civilization with incredibly advanced knowledge of mathematics, with incredibly advanced knowledge of art and culture and social identity and roles and a food source to build all these structures. It's incredible and impossible from what we know about our origins. But here it is. It exists. And I have been spending time there now. I've visited maybe 4 times. I'm friends with the owner of the family that lives there, that grew up there. They were playing on this hill as kids and had no idea. And now the government is turning it into a tourist attraction. Karahan Tepe. You're going to know about it in a few years. It's still new now. It's still being excavated. But the stuff they found is just like so mind-blowing. 10 years from now, you're going to know about Karahan Tepe. It's going to be one of the most important discoveries. It is, but it's going to be a household knowledge that it is an important discovery. What else? Karahan Tepe seems to be a leopard. Something that has to do with a leopard. You know, they found leopard bones there. They found carvings of leopards, of these men carrying leopards on their backs. I don't know what it means. Obviously, no one knows what it means because they're 12,000 years old, and how could we ever know? But to me, what this place seems to represent is like a hunting post. This is what my intuition says. This place was a hunting post, and the most fierce predator outside the human in the area would have been the leopard. And these statues of men carrying leopards on their backs are symbolic to say, like, man's dominance over the most fierce predators. That's why the leopard bones are found there. That's why the leopard carving is there. And even some of the statues, it appears that they are wearing leopard skin clothes. So to me, this is like saying, yeah, this is man's dominance over nature. And each pillar, I believe there was 18 pillars found in the main enclosure of Karahan Tepe, and that each had a human face carved into it, making archaeologists think that this place probably is, each of these probably represent a person. I think that it was a rite of passage, and maybe these people represent represented people that killed leopards. These are some of the best hunters, and they're being deified here, maybe for accomplishing something so incredible. Maybe these are lineages, tribal lineages, some, you know, leaders, 18 generations maybe. Who knows for sure? Who knows for sure? But it's all interesting to think about. And I have a very personal connection here because I've watched it go from being nothing to being something incredible. All these pillars and stuff like that. And actually, if you want to go see it, I'm doing a retreat. I have special permission to visit this place. It's not even open to the public yet. But I've got special permission to visit this place. And I can take a group of 10 people there. And I am taking a group of 10 people there. March 10 to 16th of 2023 and March 20 to 26th of 2023. I'm taking a group of 10 people to this area of Turkey, and we travel around and go to all these incredible places: Göbekli Tepe, Karahan Tepe, Mount Nemrut, Sagmatar, incredibly ancient sites from the Bible and even more ancient. It's a mind-blowing retreat. We go like on a boat and this amazing river. And it's really packed, a really adventure-packed week. And if you're from Europe or something like that, flying into Istanbul, into Şanlıurfa, is pretty cheap. Or if you're from the United States, it's worth even just buying the ticket because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You don't find retreats that tailor this kind of experience. This is a personal thing I've done a lot, and I just know it's amazing. And I want to share this with somebody. And it's actually being organized through the government of the city itself. So they are fully organizing everything, and you work with them directly. So everything is special access, and like, you know, it's fully catered and safe because it's like the government's got our back. But yeah, 2 weeks of 7 days retreats. You can come to one of the weeks. It's $1,800. What's required is a $500 non-refundable deposit, which is required as soon as possible to secure your spot. You send me an email, dakota@dakotawint.com. dakota@dakotawint.com. Say, hey, I'm interested in coming to Turkey March 10 to 16th or March 20 to 26th. That's 7 days, 6 nights. I'm interested in coming. I have my $500 deposit. And you secure your spot, boom, then you're coming, and you owe the rest of the money on the first day of the retreat, so you don't have to pay it all right away. You have a lot of time. It's August now, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. It's 7 months to save up the money to pay for the rest of the trip. It's going to be amazing. I did 1 week already of this retreat, and it was amazing. I really, really would love to show you this. And, you know, we get to hang out. Me and you get to hang out for a week with a small group of people. And we get a little bus. We hang out, talk about how the mystery of the universe while we're looking at insane archaeological stuff that you'll probably never have the opportunity to see. Obviously, unless you go by yourself. This is a really great opportunity for women and solo travelers that maybe wouldn't never go to this place by themselves. It's way safer to go in a group, and it's pretty safe to go by yourself too. I've never had any issues. But if you feel more comfortable going in a group, and maybe you're a solo traveler or a woman or a solo traveling woman or solo traveling man or solo traveling whatever, you know, you come and we'll make sure it's safe. Bada bing, bada boom. What else? I love Karahan Tepe. For me, it's so amazing to get to see this, and especially to get to see it in this early stage before it becomes a tourist destination in like 2 years. It's a blessing for those guys that are coming on the retreat with me to get to see this, because when you're old and Karahan Tepe is like the pyramids and everyone in the world knows about it, you're going to be like, damn, you know, I went there. I got to touch that, because in like 2 years from now, it's going to be totally off limits. Thailand lady boys are pretty hot, actually. The lady boys, a lady boy. You know what? Some people may not know what a ladyboy is. A ladyboy is a boy that is also a lady. A boy with boobs, or a man with boobs, and a man dick, a lady penis. And in Thailand, this is very normal. And sometimes you're just walking down the street and these lady boys, that's what they call themselves. I'm not a lady, I'm lady boy. Sometimes they will like catcall you or something. I've never been to a country where I've been catcalled and harassed more by beautiful people than Thailand. You know, you'll walk and you'll have like an arm kind of grab you and tug at you. And you look over and be like, oh, it's this beautiful woman. And then, you know, you kind of get your eyes adjust a little bit and you realize it's like a lady boy. And it just confuses the senses. It just confuses the body. You don't know. You're like, oh my God. But they're very beautiful. And also normal Thai women are beautiful. And some of you know, I went to a ping pong show. A ping pong show is a place and a little bar where there's girls dancing in the center on this stage. And they're just sort of on poles. Imagine 10 poles or maybe like 9 poles. And there's 3, 3, 3. And they're just kind of dancing like worms. Imagine one hand up on the pole. And then they're just kind of wiggling their bodies back and forth like a worm. Very uninterested, unamused, just with like some repetitive music playing. And then there'd be a voice that comes on that goes, lady pussy, ping pong, 5 minutes. Lady double pussy, ping pong, 5 minutes. And then a lady would come out. A woman, another confirmation, good sign. A woman would come out and she would hand you these paddles, ping pong paddles. And she's naked, by the way. Her boobs are out. And you say, oh my God, what's happening? I'm being given a ping pong paddle. I don't know if this is for defense, for props, for looks. What is coming in my life soon? They bring out like a therapy chair or like a sort of dentist chair that can, you know, the back can be adjusted, this chair. And the lady sits there and she puts her legs up, maybe like it's a gynecologist chair or something. She gets her legs up like she's, you know, got her legs towards the sky and her back down. And her vagina is just staring at you like Mordor from Lord of the Rings. Just like a fiery, fiery hole in some distant horizon. And you're in shock. You are in shock, so you don't really know what's happening until it's too late. And I got these ping pongs just start shooting out of her lady pussy. Like, it's like a lady pussy cannon. And you really do have to defend yourself because these things shoot at you. And you get, oh, right in the chest and it just falls down your chest. I got hit in the forehead and they're all wet and disgusting. And it's got this like sort of sluggish slime. You know, like when a slug is just slowly making its way across the ground and it leaves this residue behind itself. It feels like these balls were coated in that, these ping pong balls. And this lady is just, and you're like, oh shit, oh fuck, you gotta like the bah, 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 bah. And then you get bah, hit her back with one. Oh, and you feel all successful. And she, I hit her back with one and it just hit her right back in the pow, right in the pussy. And she was all like, oh, the crowd was clapping and stuff. Everyone was impressed. I don't know. People must not hit it back at her, but it's like, seemed like I was like, honestly, like I was in hell defeating a giant demon. But anyways, then they do this is a show, a big show in this bar. And it goes on for about an hour. Ping pong lady defeated. She leaves. Ping pong pussies. No, sorry. Lady pussy smokes cigarette. That one was impressive. A lady comes out and smokes cigarettes with her vagina. Is blowing out smoke. I didn't know it was possible. I saluted. Soldier, good job. That one was impressive. Lady pussy writes letter. They write happy birthday or like your name or whatever you want, you know. Dear Mr. President, you know, welcome to Thailand. What, anything you want in a letter, these ladies write it with their pussies. And this is the term that they referred to it there. Lady pussy. And they talk to it on lady pussy. Lady pussy magic razor. 5 minutes. Then they do the rate. This is where I was like, okay, this, I got to get out of this place instantly, because if I don't, I'm going to have some sort of trauma, because this woman is pulling razor blades out of her vagina. This is when you know it's time to leave. So Bangkok is crazy. Left that place. It's like Sin City. Sodom and Gomorrah. It's like, man, it's just like a beast of a place. I did have a little bit of trauma of that razor blade thing. I'm not going to lie. No blood or anything. I don't think it was real razor blades, but like just still, man. Jesus. Oh, then I ate some mushrooms. You know, I went out, I left that. I was like, this isn't my scene, man. This is not for me. Lady pussies and man dicks. And I don't know why. I got to get out of here, man. I'm gonna freaking out over here, man. So I went to the mountains, Pai, this little village up in the mountains of Thailand. And I, someone was like, hey, you know, if you go to the elephant farm and you say, excuse me, do you know where I can get some elephant poop with mushrooms in it? They will give you some really cheap mushrooms that grew from elephant poop, psychedelic mushrooms, magic mushrooms. So I was like, I don't know if this is true. Like, can I really just show up to some elephant farm and say like, hey, I heard you guys have mushrooms here? But I said, fuck it. I'm going to do it. I just rent this scooter. I drive 20 minutes to this elephant farm. There's these elephants everywhere. There's this guy feeding elephants. And this little old lady was just like, hey, what's up? What are you doing here? Did you want to like see a tour of meet the elephants or something? I was like, no, I'm looking for some mushrooms. And she said, oh, mushroom. You looking for mushroom? Yeah, looking for some mushrooms. You have some? Yeah. And she give me 5 minutes. And then she goes and she pulls out this bag of mushrooms and said, this is enough for 3 people. It's 500 baht. I think it's like 10 bucks. I said, okay. I think 20 bucks or something. I don't know. I said, okay, I buy it. Crazy, huge, giant mushrooms. And I ate them and it was incredible. You know, it was just like a very spiritual, very beautiful, very geometric, very humbling, very, it's crazy, you know, mushrooms. One thing I took out of this was like, I can look in my sober state of mind. I look at this wall and I see a wall, but when I'm in the mushroom state of mind, I see a million things. And they're all happening at once as like potentials. And it's all so intricate and so complex. And when I look at it now, it's just a wall. And I know that for people that have never done mushrooms or something like that, it doesn't make any sense. But it's just like, man, it's like making your brain a super brain. But anyways, guys, you know, this has been a Place for Humans podcast. We'll try to keep them going, baby. Follow me on Instagram, Dakota Wint. Make sure to click subscribe. Go to iTunes. Follow me at iTunes, A Place for Humans. And click subscribe on YouTube. Turn the notifications on. And just keep it real. I got a lot of stories to tell, man. A lot of crazy videos to upload on YouTube. So if you want to see some of these stories actually in video unfolding in real time, turn on notifications so you don't miss them.
A place for humans.
Shiva Shiva Mahadev, baby. Om. See you next time.